3:32 by my watch. Members present are Senator McGuire, Senator French, Senator Wilikowski, myself, co-chair Wagoner, and my other co-chair, Senator Pascoban, Senator Stedman, and Senator Stevens. In the audience, we have, I thought I saw Kathy Giesel here. No, there she is right there. Need another set of glasses for far away. Senator Giesel is with us. The only legislators in the room. Okay, today, first order of business is we're going to have a hearing on Senate Bill 13. And when we get through with that, I plan to move the bill. There are no objections. Then we go to Senate Bill 24. I do not plan to move Senate Bill 24 today. We'll have it before us again on Wednesday, and at that time, there are votes here. We'll move that out to the next committee of referral. So I'd ask everybody, please turn off their cell phones. It interferes with the electronics in the room when they're trying to record. And with that, Senate Bill 13 is before us. Last time it was before us, moved by Senator Pascoban, I objected. There's an amendment today by Senator French. So, Senator French, would you like to move your amendment at this time and discuss it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the amendment, and then perhaps there can be an objection tonight, and then I can discuss it. I'll move amendment number one.
Object.
Amendment number one, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to refresh the committee's recollection, this is a bill that helps waive park fees for disabled veterans, and there wasn't a lot of controversy around the bill except for cabins. And the concern that DNR had with respect to cabins was that if there were no fee whatsoever, you could book a bunch of cabins, and if you decided not to go to the cabin, it'd be stranded. No one else would get to use it. We all love to use them. They're kind of a prized asset of the state. So in working with them over the summer, we sort of arrived at the middle the way you often do and said, how about if we charge disabled vets 50% for a cabin? That way they've got some skin in the game. It costs them something to forfeit a cabin, and it'll make sure that if they do get forfeited, the cabins get put back in the pool for the rest of us to use. And that's essentially what amendment number one does. It just simply puts a 50% rule in for those disabled vets who want to rent a cabin.
Any questions? Okay. Is there, first let's have a vote on the amendment.
Or do you want to just, Mr. Chairman, do you want to just remove your objection and see if there's further objection?
I can do that. I'll remove my objection. Is there any other objection? If not, the amendment's adopted. With that, we'll go to public comment. Is there a comment from the public on Senate Bill 13? Seeing none, bring it back to committee. Public comments closed. What's the act? What's the desire of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that Senate Bill 13 be moved from this committee to the next committee referral with new recommendations and the attached fiscal note.
Okay. And before that, technically, I think I objected originally when Senator Pascoban moved the bill originally. So I'll remove my objection. So with that, the motion's been made. Is there any objection? Seeing none, bill moved to next committee of referral as amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to the rest of the committee.
Let's take a couple minutes.
Division of Occupational Licensing centralized licensing system, which itself contains statutes for the orderly wind down of a guide or a licensing board. So that as the board sunsets, in the event that it does sunset, the licenses, a new licensing system will have time to come into place, and the department itself, rather than the board, will take over the licensing. It's a small sentence, but that's the law that is being referenced in Section 3. Section 4 is the substantive portion of the bill, and it was old Section 3, so I'll just walk through Section 4 and the changes that were made there. As Senator McGuire noted, the reference to units throughout this section had been removed from the bill, and that was the first change that you'll see on Section 4. New language was inserted in the composition of the board section. This is under Section 4, page 2, lines 19 through 28. And there was a lot of public testimony about the interest in regional representation on the board. We went to the Division of Sport Fish major fishery resource areas. That was the interior, southeast, and south central, so that at least one member of the board has to be from each of those regions as the board is being appointed. There was testimony concern naturally between the sport fish and the commercial fishing community. On page 3, lines 5 through 6, the at-large public member requirement was added that they have never held a commercial fishing license. We heard that suggestion from more than one individual and inserted that within the bill. A very substantive change you'll find in the duties and powers of the board section, which begins on page 3, line 16, and moves through page 4, line 26. This was added on line 7 through line 13. Now, while occupational boards do interact with the governor and make recommendations to the governor, there was a feeling from the industry that the Guide Commercial Services Board offer some more level of benefit, and this is a substantial policy point. And so language from the Minerals Commission, which is not a licensing board, was inserted into the bill. And the feeling was, you'll see in sub 9, 7 through 10, a report on the impact of sport fishing on the state's economy, that this board would commission and prepare that report to the legislature and the governor. Typically, reports from occupational boards go to the governor. They do not come directly to the legislature. The importance of the sport fishing industry to the state, the inclusion of the legislature within that was felt to be important. Sub 10, lines 11 through 13 are the second portion of that, setting up the timeline for when the dates are, when the dates are being, when that report has to be made. Another substantial point was in response to the concerns over the limited entry provisions of the original bill related to guide use unit areas, there was a concern that the sport fishing industry wanted a seat at the table in the event that limited entry regulations are drafted. That was the attempt on page 4, lines 20 through 22, notwithstanding requiring a regulation that has the effect of limiting entry to sport fish guides to come through this board in order to be approved. Those are major policy calls that came through public input, and the committee should consider those in their deliberations carefully. New language was added on page 4, lines 23 through 26. Concern was brought up with the requirement for an examination that you'll see under the guide licensing section. Under the direction to the board, the goal being that this test is available electronically and that a person who fails the test may retake it. The point being that the purpose of the test should not be to exclude participants in the fishery, but to guarantee a certain level of knowledge, and that being really related to the fish and game regulations of the state that the guide is naturally assisting their clients in upholding. In the next page, we go to page 5.
Question about that?
Certainly.
Excuse me, Senator Branch.
Perhaps a question, thank you. If a guided client now runs afoul of the fish and game laws, I take it he or she is on the hook? I mean, if the guide takes them into a closed area and they're fishing in a closed area and it's the guide who has the, or the client, I'm sorry, has the fish in the, a line in the water, is there a rule for, I mean, I'm assuming that the client's on the hook, but maybe the guide just pays it out of the fact that it was his fault. You know how it works?
Senator French, through the chair, I would prefer to have the Department of Fish and Game answer that if they can.
We can wait till after your overviews.
Certainly.
There's no point in jumping out of there. Thank you.
Sure.
Senator Stevens.
Just a question on the immediately retake. I mean, you're not saying that, it should be saying here that you take the exam, you fail it, you immediately have to retake it. What if you wait a while? Why immediate?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, the goal with the immediately retake was the suggested language from participants in the fishery, and the reason I think they wanted that was that it was not required, but it was permissive, so that there was no waiting period that was automatically enforced. If somebody failed the test, that the board would retain the option to allow someone to do that rather than forcing them to do it. So that was the word may and permissive, and the goal being that there's other language that was originally intended to say the board has to meet twice a year. There was some interest, honestly, from participants that these tests be available only twice a year, partly to get people to come back and demonstrate their real residency. That has been drifted away from in the bill and in this electronic requirement. So I think the guiding community wanted assurances that they would have the opportunity, not be forced to.
Senator Stedman.
Chairman, while we're asking a few questions, can we back up to page 3, line 5? Page 3, line 5, C, have not held a commercial fishing license or permit under AS-16, so that is the language you're talking about. Someone cannot ever have held a commercial fishing license?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. One of the things that might be something we need to look at, because you could be 3 or 4 or 5 years old and have a commercial fishing license being on your parents' boat, and then you're excluded for the rest of your life. So there might be some, you know, I think we might need some flexibility on some of that language. And then when you walk through the issue of license and generally the language in state or another state mentioning Canada or Mexico or in Canada or Mexico, why are they included? And if they aren't included like that, why isn't Brazil included or Venezuela or?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, if I might, my understanding of that was part of the language that came out of the original task force, and it had to do, as I understand it, with provisions under treaties between the U.S. and Canada that we were required to accept that as part of commerce under services. That issue has not been raised as the bill has moved through, and so it's not something that we've addressed from the original version. But I can get an answer back to the committee.
Senator Stedman.
And then another one, as you go walk through the process, kind of point out to me the connection, if you could, between the outfitter, sport fishing outfitter license and the guide license, in that I assuming then the outfitter would be the lodge. Is that correct?
Senator Stedman, through the chair. Oftentimes, I think you would find it in practice being a lodge, but the intent is to go deeper than that and to deal with anyone who is renting the equipment specifically for sport fishing services, so the boats and the rods to get out there. Someone might be renting their boat without being a lodge, and so it was to get at the unguided fishery.
Okay.
Senator Stedman?
The area of concern I have is that when we look at the language throughout the bill, that we have the ability to tie an illegal guiding activity that is basically sanctioned by a lodge, so we can make a tie from the guide to the lodge, because currently we have trouble doing that. The guide will just, or the lodge will just say, well, he's a private contractor, he's rogue, what have you, I didn't know what he's doing, when in fact in many circumstances he knows very well what his basic employees are doing, even though they're technically contract employees, and in some cases work for the people virtually year-round. So I'd like to see language tying the responsibility of the guide directly to the lodge. There's directors we can make it so they have responsibility over their employees.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
And/or contractors.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, it's an incredibly important piece of this bill that is different than existing law. You are absolutely correct. And the citation I draw the committee's attention to so that you can highlight it for future reference, because it was not a change from the original bill substantively, is on page 13, lines 30 through page 14, line 11. And you'll see in sub 1 under page 14, line 2, the outfitter, transporter, or guide being equally responsible for violations of regulations under this chapter or associated laws while in the course of a person's employment with a sport fishing guide, sport fishing outfitter, or sport fishing transportator. The original licensee is responsible for that. The change from the original bill is it included assistant guides. In the new version of the bill, since assistant guides have to be under the employee or supervision of a licensed guide, assistant guides were removed from that section since the onus and the responsibility in the way the bill's designed falls to the licensee that is employing or supervising them. And the language may need to be tightened more, but just for committee reference while you're on that point, that's where that language is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this is kind of a nitpicky little change, but on page 5, line 4, in the original version of the bill, the license was called a sport fishing guide outfitter license. In the interest of cleanliness, the word was changed to sport fishing guide because the sheer number of licenses was quite confusing to the public. The guide retains the ability to be an outfitter, but it's just called a sport fishing guide license. It was a cleanup statute. Page 5, line 5. In the original version of the bill, all the different licenses, guide, outfitter, assistant guide, and transporter, were biennial licenses. In talking with the departments, it was felt that annual licenses were cleaner and easier to administer than biennial, so the bill has been shifted to an annual licensing system. Some provisions that have been deleted from the guide, the requirements to become a guide, were the requirement in the original bill that a person be licensed as an assistant guide for 3 years and have a certain amount of time within the fishery. That would be a major departure from the existing system to become a guide in the state of Alaska. The public said that was onerous, didn't fit with the business models, so that has been removed. The difference in the current license that is before you and the current system is the requirement to pass an examination. And that examination, you'll see, is on page 5, lines 19 through 21. Oh, I'm sorry. 17 through 18. That's the qualification examination approved by the board, the design of which was on page 3, lines 17 through 20. So in the original version of the bill that was before the committee, there were several requirements that had been taken out. An additional one was a general requirement that allowed the board to adopt regulations that the guide licensee had to meet. The public was very concerned about a guide board coming up with regulations that the legislature hadn't envisioned, so the board has been tightened down to only these specific items that you see in here is what can be required for a guide license. In page 6, line 24, let me draw your attention, Mr. Chairman, to page 6, line 9 through 23. The master guide license provision has been retained in this bill. There was considerable public testimony that they felt that this was unnecessary. This was an elective license, and part of the thinking behind it that we also heard testimony about was that in hunting, a master guide is a very specific thing that comes with very specific credentials. In fishing, we don't have the same type of statutory construction for what would be a master guide. And so we did receive testimony that there was concerns about what could be considered almost duplicitous advertising to the public. So some form of master guide clarifying it was retained in the bill. That was not taken out, though it is controversial to people. In the sport fishing outfitter license, page 24 through 21, The provisions that were taken out of this section were the requirement to pass a test, the reason being that the outfitter, there was a lot of testimony that the outfitter, the lodge owner, might not be actually a guide. They might just be renting things to people. The point of the licenses in the first place is to identify people engaged in the sport fishing business so that ultimately a logbook program might be able to be put into their hands. So the requirement, if they are not providing guiding services, the public didn't feel that they needed to be a guide, so that requirement to pass the examination was taken out. Clearly, page 7, line 5 through 6.
Senator Stebbins.
On that subject, I'm just kind of curious on that, because the outfitter has responsibility of the guide. That's the pecking order, and the guide has responsibilities of the assistant, right?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, the outfitter and the guide might be considered co-equal, because the prohibition on page 7, line 7 through 9, says a person holding a sport fishing outfitter license may not provide sport fishing guide or transportation services. You might have a situation where there is an outfitter who does not ever operate as a guide. Indeed, it might be rare.
But So the point I want to make, Mr. Chairman, we might want to think about that a little bit more, because I think it might be beneficial to have the outfitter know what's acceptable behavior and what's unacceptable behavior, what's legal, what's not. So when he's dealing with other guides or assistant guides or within the industry, he knows when somebody's more apt to know when somebody's out of bounds on their behavior. And if there's no testing, all he does is get a license, and it's up to him to read the reg book and understand it. I guess, Mr. Chairman, if I could, maybe I'm a little overly sensitive to some of this, because in some of my communities, we've had some lodges that are a little on the egregious side, and how they let their guides just run amok and try to claim they know nothing about what's going on. And in the islands down here, there's not too many secrets.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, if I might, just to add to what you're saying, I'd turn the committee back to page 3, lines 17 through 20, which is the description of the test that the board is required to prepare. And if you do decide to reintroduce the testing requirement to the other licenses, this is what you would be referencing. And that is to demonstrate that the applicant is qualified generally to provide sport fishing guide and sport fishing outfitter services, and in particular, possesses knowledge of fishing and sport fishing laws and regulations. That's the nature of the test, just to add to what the senator was saying.
Senator Pascat?
Sure. If I understand what Senator Stedman is focusing on is what happens if the outfitter employs the guide and the outfitter doesn't need to pass a test, and then you've theoretically broken the connection between the guide and the outfitter. Is that, in other words, I'm concerned,
Senator Passman,
as to what Senator Stedman has raised in that regard.
Senator Passman, through the chair, it is a fair question, but in order to be a guide and to provide the guide services, you have to have a guide license. And so an outfitter might employ a guide, but they might also not. And if they're not, then they would have to get the outfitter license.
Senator Stedman.
I think the point of just trying to make sure that the outfitter, under all circumstances, is brought to a level of awareness within the industry where he knows the difference between right and wrong. Some people, like John Dillinger, thinks bank robbery is just fine. Some lodge owners aren't too far from it, how they treat our resources. Not all. There's a small number of apples in the cart, but they are there. So I think it would be beneficial to bring everybody's awareness up, and it makes it a lot harder for them to claim that they just didn't understand.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, in that they are responsible, that's a very fair point. If I might, the next substantial change is in the Sport Fishing Assistant Guide license, which goes from page 7, lines 22, down through page 8, line 26. And here, a change was made to line 25 to the reduction to 16 years of age. The original bill, you had to be 18 to be a sport fishing assistant guide. The reason the change was made is that a person 16 to 18 could not qualify, as I understand it, under the Coast Guard licensing, which is required, page 7, lines 30 through page 8, line 2. You will be required to have a Coast Guard license if you're in an area that a Coast Guard license is required. But we receive significant testimony from people that there are areas of the state where 16, 17-year-olds work as walk-in guides and walking guides in the summers, and there was an attempt to give them an opportunity to still remain in that type of employment. Remember that an assistant guide, per page 8, line 25 and 26, has to carry proof of employment or supervision, which takes you back to that responsibility section. They have to work under a licensed guide. They cannot work out there on their own. So this is that sort of tier up to the next level of guide. Within both of those, again, as in the guide section, the generic requirement in the original bill of all additional requirements adopted in regulation has been removed from the requirements in order to get a license. Again, the reasoning behind that was to not give the board the ability to go too far beyond what the legislature expressed was required to become a guide, assistant guide, outfitter, or transporter. Yeah. On the next section, there was, let's go down to, in Article 3, which is page 10, lines 15 through page 11, line 31. This is the enforcement section, which gives powers to the board to enforce certain specific violations. A couple things have been removed from this section in regards to public testimony. Originally, there were provisions that allowed board discipline in the event of a breach of an agreement or contract with a client. There were some discretionable actions by the board. The language has been tightened up per public testimony to specifically only be related to, as you see on page 10, lines 20 through 22, the conviction. If a person is convicted of a violation of a state or federal statute or regulation related to sport fishing, failed to file records or reports, that's page 10, line 23, 24 is negligently misrepresenting or omitting a material fact. The public did not want the board to have the ability to, there was a lot of concern about a group of their peers regulating guides and that too much discretion in the hands of the board wasn't warranted right out of the gate, but to keep it to definable offenses. As members might have seen in editorials or other commentary recently, there's a gap potentially in our current statutes that if a person, as Senator Stedman notes, is a bad apple and is committing violations out there, it's almost impossible for the Department of Fish and Game right now to not give them a license if they come back. This would provide an opportunity to take the license away from someone who has committed violations of our sport fishing and game laws.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Chairman, I'd like to have a little bit more thought on this also. And that's in a couple of different areas. One is if you're convicted of a felony, and the other one is if you're convicted of a felony with moral turpitude being substantially worse. That's like bank robbery, money laundering, murder, mayhem. I'm not sure if they should ever be licensed, those type of characters. And I'm not even sure if you have a felony conviction, you shouldn't be barred itself. There's a lot of licenses that you cannot have with certain types of offenses. And at the minimum, I think we should have a felony with moral perpetuity in there in the event that it is ever needed to keep those type of folks out of the industry. So maybe I can get a little bit deeper explanation on the magnitude of offense being convicted of that would trigger such a revocation.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, I might ask Fish and Game when they come up, or if they come up, to help in defining that a little bit better. The language was made broad specifically to encompass laws relating to. That may be too narrow for what you're saying, because theft or fraud would not be included in that. Mm-hmm. So the attempt, based on public testimony, was to tighten it down. It might have gone too far.
I don't want to burn too much time, but I was just thinking, you know, if you have a conviction of drug trafficking, for example, I don't think that'd be desirable to have as a lodge operator or put in a position over our natural resources.
Just for the committee's aid, on page 12, lines 1 through page 13, line 29, is a list of unlawful acts, but these are specifically designed and related to guiding themselves and do not cover the universe of issues that Senator Stedman's referencing. There was an addition in this enforcement section, and forgive me, Mr. Chairman, it's page 11, lines 8 through 10, and this was added at the input of Fish and Game, and it says that if the board imposes a disciplinary sanction under this title, they may notify the appropriate state and federal agencies, and that was just the ability to communicate in case there are communications required to say, this person was sanctioned, they might be trying to go to different states, and you had to give the board the authority to share that information explicitly in statute, so that was inserted. As far as the rest of the bill goes, the major changes were repeal under the transporter section. That's under it was in the old page 11, and it was the allowing a guide to be sport fishing guide to personally pilot an aircraft and go out and guide. That ran afoul of FAA rules, and we received that in testimony, so that troublesome language was taken out of the bill. The other major substantive changes are in Section 6, which is all the way back into page 17. And it actually goes on to page 18, line 8. This is the electronic, line 12, changing the word may to shall. We heard considerable testimony throughout the process that electronic reporting storage was desirable, so that change was made. Having said that, within all of these things, the final major changes are, if you go down to Section 9, Section 10, Section 12, 13, 14, 15. The effective dates have been moved around in the bill to, as I said, delay implementation for 2 years, because this is a major change to the industry. There was concern about it being too rapid and not an adequate public process being gone through. The creation of the test, the creation of the electronic system, new guides being licensed. So the effective date was delayed for 2 years, as the board is allowed to be set up under Section 14 with specific and limited powers. And those sections, as most effective dates, Mr. Chairman, are referenced by sections and numbers, so I thought I'd just highlight for the committee what those powers actually are listed. And that's Section 1 being the legislative intent, Section 2 the inclusion in the centralized licensing statute, Section 3 the termination dates for regulatory boards, the Section 11 uncodified laws and repealer sections, the creation and membership of the board, board assistance from other state agencies, powers and duties of the board, preparation of the examination, adoption of regulations, the meeting at least twice annually, the establishment of a code of ethics, licensing and examination fees and definitions. Those are what go into effect in January 1, 2013. The rest of the bill would be delayed until 2015, and then the bill itself would sunset in 2018. But as I said, in sunsetting, the board sunsets, the logbook and the licensing systems could be maintained until they are wound down by the department under the centralized licensing statute. Mr. Chairman, I am sure there's a fair amount of public testimony on this version, so with that, I'd answer any further questions, but have good points from the committee to go back and look at as well.
We do have a little bit of public testimony lined up. Thank you, Mr. Pawlowski. Any other additional questions? Thank you, Michael. With that, let me see the number of people we got here. I think I'm going to limit testimony to 2 minutes on public testimony. And the first thing I'm going to do is go to the off-net. And the first person on the off-net would be Tom Ojas.
Hello?
I can barely hear you. Let us get the volume up.
Okay.
There you go.
Good. Okay.
Okay, so go ahead and proceed. You got 2 minutes.
I'm speaking from Sitka. My name's Tom Ojas. I'm speaking. I own a charter business here in a lodge. I want to start out thanking Senator McGuire for all the effort and work done to solicit industry input for this revision and for being responsive to criticism, concerns, and observations. And bringing the current version before us. Our organization, CEGO, has also reached out to operators and made an effort to facilitate structured conversations that help people provide specific and significant amendments that have contributed to the new committee substitute. For instance, electronic monitoring coming from the general fund rather than from licensing, I think is a big plus for the industry because it decreases the fiscal note and the overall licensing fee. From the point of view of the industry, we're supportive of the general purpose of SB 24, an industry governed by a board of its peers to provide a platform for increased participation in fisheries management. Our industry has often expressed concern that those managing us don't fully understand and don't grasp our business model, and they don't understand the regulatory requirements that we need in order to keep our industry whole and keep contributing to local economies. I also so think it's important to get our hands around what would be non-guided lodges and so forth, so we know what's really going on out there in boats that people are paying to be in but don't have a guide. And that's it for me. I just want to thank you all for the opportunity to speak in favor of SB 24.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions by the committee? I see no questions, so you can run catch your plane now, Tom. Appreciate you testifying.
Thank you.
Thank you. Second person on off-net will be Greg Sutter. Are you on there, Greg?
Yes, thank you. This is Greg Sutter, representing the Alaska Charter Association. I'd like to mirror Tom's comments and thank you for really looking at our industry and trying to put forward something that is really going to help our industry. And I just have to make another notation that originally when this bill was introduced in its original form, the ACA could not lend any support for the original version. And we've gone through two versions now, and we're going to be giving this latest version to our membership. And right now, our board is still divided, and I haven't heard entirely back from my board on the latest version, but we've gone from a bill that did not have any of the ACA support to having about half of our board support. And we're going to be putting this out to our membership, and hopefully we'll be able to gain some more support and also feedback to you all that is meaningful to where we can have something that will address the issues in Alaska and also make it more marketable and user-friendly for the folks that want to come up fishing. So you will be hearing from us again, and I want to thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Greg. Any questions from the committee? Thanks for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Joel Hansen and Sitka.
Yes, this is Joel Hansen with the boat company in Sitka. We operate a couple of small cruise vessels. They're 150-foot vessels. They're motherships to a small fleet of skiffs, and each of our skiffs is independently licensed as a charter boat and carries its own logbook and so forth. We're a different enough of a operation that I attend these sessions to review this legislation on a regular basis because it's pretty easy to kind of forget that there's a huge difference between some of the business models that operate in the charter universe, and we're certainly different. This legislation, I guess I would like to say thanks to all those who have worked on it because it's a much different bill than the original, and this particular version is workable as far as I can tell in my initial review of it. I really appreciate the work that has gone into coming up with this version. One of the senators in committee asked about the need for the immediate retake of the test, and I'd just like to point out that it's a very important element of this legislation for the reason that the boat company's operation, we're going to have to rely on having a licensed guide on each of our mother vessels and then a number of assistant guides operating our skiffs. Now, we may, in some instances, end up with licensed guides, with multiple licensed guides on each vessel, but there's no guarantee that might happen on a normal basis every year. So it's important for us to be able to have one of our assistant guides who can spring into action, take an examination, pass an examination, and get a license on fairly short notice, on fairly short turnaround, if the licensed guide who is on that vessel is for some reason, you know, maybe he gets sick and has to stay on shore for a trip or two. Whatever the instance may be, that provision of having an immediate retake of the test will better guarantee that we can have somebody up and operating and being able to meet the needs of the requirements on short order. So other than that, I guess I don't see anything that stands out as any particular problem, and I appreciate the work that's been done on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody in the committee have a question? Senator Paskban's got a question, Joel.
I'm interested in your definition of independently operated boats. I take that to mean that they are under independent contractor financial arrangements. Is that accurate or inaccurate?
Senator Paskan, through the chair, no. Actually, all of our skiffs, which we carry on board the mother vessels, are operated by crew members who are employees. They're direct employees. So, no, we don't contract with anyone.
So what does the independently operated mean if they're operated by employees? That's what I'm trying to comprehend.
Yes. I'm sorry. Maybe it was misleading. They just oftentimes go off in different directions so that we have multiple skiffs out at any given point in time.
Okay, I follow. They are all employees under the law, not independent entities under independent contractor arrangements.
That's correct.
Thank you.
One other question, Joel. This is Senator Wagner. So you have larger boats, these liveaboard vessels the client comes in and spends several nights on, or how does that work?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we do week-long trips between Sitka and Juneau. So while one of our vessels does a turnaround on a weekend in Juneau, the other vessel is doing a turnaround in Sitka at the opposite end of the trajectory. And when they start a trip, they meet halfway somewhere around South End Admiralty Island and carry on about their route. So, yes, we do week-long trips. We've been doing this now for close on to 35 years.
Let me ask you one other question. Your guides and assistant guides, where are they hired from? Are they Alaskans? Are they outside people? Where's the majority of those people? Where do you find them?
The majority of them are from out of state. Because of our need to have our crew members do kind of double service. They are guides as well as officers and licensed folks for the operation of the big vessel. So because of the level of license that's required for operating our larger vessels, we have people that we specifically hire to, you know, with a higher level license to operate the bigger boats. And so our operation generally is of interest to employees because it provides an opportunity to get good qualifying sea time on larger vessels for going up the ladder of command. While we do hire a number of people from Alaska, the majority are from out of state.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. One more question from Senator Pasvan.
When it comes to the licensing of the business, how many types of licenses do you have to receive?
Senator Pasvan, through the chair, well, the boat company has, I don't know if you specifically mean for guiding, but altogether the number of licenses that we have to get is pretty substantial. Currently a guide just has to get a guide license, but we also, of course, have to have a sport fishing business license, and then all of the various licenses that are required for our Coast Guard requirements. Both our mother vessels are inspected passenger vessels under Coast Guard regulations.
Does the business get a outfitter license?
No, we don't have to get an outfitter license because we're not outfitting. We always guide our groups whenever we go either ashore for shore-based excursions, sport fishing or hiking excursions. They're all guided, as are all of our saltwater trips are all guided.
Any further questions? Okay. With that, that'll be all. Thank you very much, Joel. I appreciate your testimony. Next person would be Stan Malcolm from Petersburg.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Stan Malcolm. I own and operate a sport fishing charter business here in Petersburg. I'm president of the Petersburg Charter Boat Association and a board member of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization. My testimony will be in support of SB 24. I was a member of the original stakeholders task force formed by the state to discuss issues concerning the sport fishing industry a few years back. One of the things identified of concern to me was the no licensing or reporting requirements for the unguided segment of the sport fish industry, as well as no single body or agency that we could bring our concerns or ideas to, or to act as a voice for our industry. our task force discussions led to the concept of a sport fish guide services board similar to the big game guide services board and to what is now SB 24. I, too, would like to thank Senator McGuire for bringing this idea forward and for all her and her staff's time in refining that concept into what I believe will be a good vehicle for representing our industry and issues to the state, the legislature, and other management and regulatory agencies that we deal with, while also providing for needed requirements for our industry. I know there has been some reluctance about the need for this from some portions of the industry, but there is always some doubt about anything new and different. I do believe this will benefit our industry going forward and serve our industry. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Stan. Next off net will be Ricky Geese. You on there, Ricky?
Yes, I am. This is Ricky Geese from Kenai River Sport Fishing. Can you hear me okay?
Coming in good.
Thank you. I'm the executive director of Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. We're a 501c3 nonprofit in Soldotna focused on fishery conservation issues. We believe SB 24 is a very good step in the right direction of bringing minimum professional standards to the guided industry across Alaska. Also, we believe that the comprehensive nature of having professional standards for guides, outfitters, and transporters and requiring each to have logbook data is important to get a comprehensive view of the harvest that is being taken throughout Alaska. That's important information for area managers to look at and to see trends. We support the electronic logbook requirement for fish and game. It's been we're pretty far into the 21st century now, and I think it's about time. You know, we've been asking fish and game to go towards more of a logbook reporting requirement. I think that requirement pushes them in the right direction further. This has been a very comprehensive nature. We've gone through the stakeholder committee with guides throughout the state. We've had many public hearings on it. I believe this process, as it goes forward, will continue to refine a good product, and we fully support it. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Ricky. Next off, that would be Ruben Hanke.
Thank you, Senator Wagner, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Ruben Hanke. I'm here representing myself today. My wife and I own and operate a fish camp on the Kenai River. I, too, as Mr. Malcolm, was on the original task force that came up with the white paper suggesting this type of approach for the fishing, the sport fishing industry. And as you can see today in the current version that's before you, there have been several changes. And Senator McGuire and her staff and even you and your staff, Mr. Chairman, have put in a lot of time on this thing and done a lot of changes. You've listened to what other people in the industry have to say, and I'm sure there's still probably a tweak or two that need to be done with this thing, but so far this is a great product, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. And like I say, I really want to thank you folks there in the Senate and in the committee, and especially Senator McGuire and her staff for being there for us and listen to everyone's concerns. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Ruben. With that, we'll go to Kodiak. Dick Rohr.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Dick Rohr, 42-year resident of Kodiak. I'm a master big game guide, have been in the sport fish guiding business here on Kodiak since 1982, and I just completed two terms of service on the Commercial Services Board. So I have, I'm very familiar with the Commercial Services Board process. I want to note just a few things. I think it's a mistake to not leave in the bill authority for the board at some time to identify guide use areas and identify maximum numbers of operators per area. Not that they would do that right away at all, but if the authority not there now with this bill, we'll never get it. So I encourage you to put that back in. There's another issue that that was required in big game statutes for the board to develop terms for contracts between guides and clients for services to specify what the client is paying for. I think that authority should be put back in here, requirement for the board to do that. And just listening to the comments about who was doing what on that large vessel, it would be good to have that spelled out for the client so if services are not provided, he knows who was responsible. I have some question about the electronic testing and the ease of retesting. I have some question about the value of that. The big game guiding industry thinks that for those of us who have registered and master licenses and can demonstrate years of involvement in the sport fish guide industry that a grandfather license should be part of this legislation, and I would say the same for sport fish guides who have been in the industry a long time. On page 6, line 1 of the current version, where it speaks about logbooks and permits, there's the words readily available. Relating to logbooks, I would like to identify exactly what that means, maybe define it. Maybe that's something that the board could do. On page 9, line 9, section B, I would suggest that section B be deleted. That came directly from the big game side, and it had a purpose for being there. I think that there would be no reason for a transporter to have clients on a boat with living quarters and that transporter not have a guide's license. Maybe the gentleman that follows me can be more specific about the reasons for that, but I can't imagine a client being on a boat with living quarters and not be sport fishing off the back deck with the operator, the captain right there. One other thing on page 16, section 8. And just let me turn to it quickly. Under the definition section of sport fishing outfitter services, in the big game, on the big game side, there's a new business that's come into play in the last few years. It's essentially unregulated, and it is something that is called trip planning services. And I'd like to see that wording included in this section 8 under that definition, as well as camping, someone who provides camping equipment, so that that section would identify not just renting fishing rods and vessels, but also camping equipment. But I'd be happy to expand on the trip planning services if you'd like me to. With that, I'll close my testimony and take the question if you have it.
Thank you, Mr. Rohr. Any questions? No questions, but thank you very much for your input. Appreciate it. Next will be Don Smokey Duncan from Fairbanks.
Good afternoon, Senators and Mr. Chairman. This is Smokey Don Duncan, Master Guide number 136. I hold a big game commercial services board license for hunting. I am here today again, once again, to not support SB 24. I don't believe it's needed. I believe it's a statewide solution to a localized problem, which sounds to me like it's along the ocean and maybe along the Kenai, but this should not apply north of the Alaska Range. I would strongly advise all resource committee members to get the list of licensed sport fishing guides in their communities and send them a letter, a postcard, or a phone call and ask them if they support this. I don't see this as being a good thing, particularly for the interior guides or small-time guides. My specific objections that I want this committee to be aware of is to get a U.S. Coast Guard license, you have to get a TWIC card. To get a TWIC card, you have to travel. The closest place for us would be Anchorage, and all of the TWIC locations are along the coast. One of my guys just renewed his license. It cost him two trips. You have to go in person twice.
total grand, total cost $3,000. I believe we should let the Coast Guard enforce the Coast Guard requirements. I strongly encourage you to remove all reference to a Coast Guard license requirement. Let them take care of enforcing. They have no presence here on the interior and in the rivers north of the Alaska Range. They shouldn't have jurisdiction by state law on waters controlled by the state or where they have no aids to navigation or patrols. I believe SB 24 needs a specific exemption for big game guides who may take or allow a contracted hunter to fish incidentally during the hunt. This doesn't need to be a carryover nightmare where we're operating under two different licenses. Fish and Wildlife Protection have said that they are going to enforce it as receiving remuneration, even though in my contract it says this is only for a hunt. And but if I let the guy go fishing while I'm in the boat, he's going to write me up. I would suggest removing the insurance requirement under this bill. Alaska law currently says recreation service providers are exempt from liability, except for gross negligence. And gross negligence is denied on most policies. So we get to pay for no coverage. You can look it up. Most landowners, if they allow you to be on their property, are going to require something. Let them require it. This bill doesn't need it. I wanted to bring your attention to a loophole that's in the Big Game Commercial Services Board. We have transporter licenses. Those transporters are one person holding one license, yet they may employ any number of what I call assistant transporters that haven't been vetted, haven't passed anything, and pay no license fees. I'm not sure what this bill actually does. It requires all of the boat operators operating under a transporter license to have it, or if you can have one license holder and many, many assistant transporters with no license.
Mr. Duncan, you're well over the time. If you got any other testimony, I hate to cut you short, but we got several people who want to testify. If you got further testimony, could you put it in writing and send it to my either fax it or email it to my office?
I sure can.
Okay.
Senator Thomas Wagner?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in Fairbanks is Reed Morisky.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity to testify. I was one of the original task force members that helped formulate this the early concept on this, and I am in support of SB 24. I'm in support of the concept. I would like to be part of managing my own industry, and that's why I'm in support of it. So that's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Reed. I appreciate your testimony. Next is Virgil Uppenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Virgil Uppenauer. This isn't the first time this has been attempted to be done. When I was on the Board of Fisheries, which I was on from 94 through 2002, with the help of Representative Osterman from Kodiak, a bill actually went through the House, but Senator Halford, Chairman of Senate Resources, killed it. Anyway, we tried to do this back then. NAFTA stands for North American Free Trade Agreement. That's why you have to have it in there. What caused the Board of Fisheries to try to do this 15 years or so ago was the number of alien lodges. When I say alien, I mean from Europe primarily, that are pure extraction economy with zero conservation ethic. That's why we tried to do it. I am in favor of this, but I am also, like Mr. Duncan and Mr. Rohr, a master big game guide. When I took my test to become a registered guide a long time ago, about 10% of what we got tested on was sport fishing. To leave us out and then have the troopers harassing us and have us have to go through two different systems is absurd. We should be grandfathered in. And when we had our meetings, because we had statewide meetings about a four-year process when I was on the Board of Fisheries, the large lodge owners were 100% against this, and so I asked them, why don't you guys hire local people? They said, local people won't work. So I went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and University of Alaska Anchorage job placement for students, and no lodge had asked any of the university job placement programs for any Alaska resident college students to work for them. It's because they're too cheap. They don't want to pay nothing. That's why they hire all these non-residents, unlike us registered and master guides in Alaska that pay our employees at least $250 a day to work guiding. That's why the sport fish, big lodge owners that probably, if you would, most of them live out of state or they're in foreign countries, don't want to pay nothing. Just nothing but extraction economy. I am, however, in favor of this. I would like you to listen to Mr. Dick Rohr from Kodiak. He has a lot of information, and if you have any questions for me, I have a lot of background in this issue as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Virgil. Are there any questions from the committee? Virgil, I just want to ask you one question. I'm seriously thinking about putting in a bill that restricts personal use fish from being exported outside the state of Alaska. What would be your reaction to that, since personal use fisheries are supposed to be for Alaska residents?
That's correct. The definition of personal use is for personal family consumption in the state of Alaska.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Thanks for your testimony. Next is from Soldotna, Scott Egemeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Egemeyer. I'm representing myself today. I'd also like to thank Senator McGuire's office for continuing to put this together and make it palatable for everyone involved. And I would also like to show my continued support for Senate Bill 24. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Scott. Any questions? Next is David Gosia.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gosia had a previous appointment, but Mr. Drath is ready to speak.
Okay, Mr. Drath, go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank Senator McGuire's office for their contribution to this bill. Appreciate all the work and working out the details right now. I'm personally, I'll speak on behalf of Kenai River Professional Guide Association. We are in support of Senate Bill 24. And it's great to see that we have, you know, many other associations getting involved across the state. On the Kenai River, we've had an exam in place for quite a while, and we've also had an association that's fairly strong, and we've seen a lot more professionalism on our river over the past few years. I've been guiding for 16 years now, and I've seen a big change since I was younger. Personally, I'd just like to be in support of the electronic logbooks. That would be great. That's definitely needed. You know, my hope is our industry will become more professional, and I'd like to speak about that outfitter being required to take an exam. I'm an outfitter. I hire 5 to 6 guides in a season, and I require my guides to take an exam that I also give them personally. And I just believe that they've got to be able to know, an outfitter's got to be able to know what his guides are doing out there, and he's got to, he doesn't have to be a guide, but he needs to know exactly what they're doing. So thank you very much for the time to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Draft. Appreciate your time. Any questions? Okay, next we'll go to Gary Homer. Mr. Ault?
Oh, there we are. Pushed the wrong button. thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Gary Ault. I'm representing the Homer Charter Association. For the most part, the association has support for the bill with some reservations, which range from the halibut charters down here. A lot of them say that it's a federal fish and we're fishing in federal waters. Where does the state come into play on this? Why are we subject to this bill? A lot of other say negative comments were just because of the reading of the bill sometimes got a little bit too much self, indulgence in it. Anyway, by the person who was reading it. But for the most part, there was just a few questions that shook a lot of us down here. A lot of boats from Homer are large vessels, and they Coast Guard requires several deckhands at times. It depends on the number of people. Now, are these deckhands assistant guides, crewing, keeping a boat crewed through the summer is difficult at best most of the time. And if there is, if these deckhands are assistant guides, then there's going to be an issue with keeping that boat manned properly. Let's see, another one was the electronic logbooks are way past due, and we've got to make it more user friendly to keep track of all the things that every fish we touch we have to record, whether we keep it or not. So it's becoming a real paperwork issue. As far as most of us are concerned, we just hope that you keep up the good work and keep the public involved in the process here. And for the most part, the Homer Charter Association supports Senate Bill 24. Thank you.
Good timing. Thank you, Mr. Ault. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Next is Ketchikan, Don Westland.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I do not support SB 24. It doesn't go far enough. It's not what I've thought that the board asked them to do. It doesn't restrict any growth in our industry, which the commercial side is always saying we have an open-end fishery. Robin Taylor tried to come up with a limited entry program for us back in the 80s. The state did a study. I can't remember the exact name. I think it was done in 92. And it told you what you needed to do to get us into limited entry. There is a suggestion that people who supply that organize trips for people, sport fishing trips, should hold a license. That means that all cruise ships, all travel agents down south would need to have a license. I also feel that this is kind of a money grab. I already pay a lot. Also, I am a commercial fisherman, so I would be excluded from participating on the board if I so chose to. Even if I sold my permits, I would be excluded. The state needs to take and do something different than SB 24. We need to go to some type of a limitation on issuances of fishing guides. To address several things, overcrowding in areas. And I take offense to page 20 and the Kenai guides not having to take and go through this. I mean, if you're going to take and require us as a sport fishing guide service to take and take a test, everybody needs to be into this. And for the big game operators who want to be grandfathered into this, then as a sport fishing guide, I need to be grandfathered into the master guide, hunting guide section. Also, I've been in this since 1986. I consider myself a person who has a business that is not worth anything unless there is something that will take and limit the growth of the guided sport industry. And that means some type of limited entry or restriction on the state issuing guide licenses. So I am not in support of this for many other reasons, and I tried to get in as many as I could. I'll let you go from there. I do thank everybody who has worked on this, but it does not go where I thought the Board of Fisheries asked the workshop to go. I thought that they were going for some type of limitation. This does not limit any growth in the industry. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. It doesn't address salmon chartering, but it does pretty well limit. I mean the federal people have already pretty well limited halibut charters, seems
to
me.
That's true. And what the state is doing is, without doing some type of limitation, you're creating two types of guide services.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I think we still need to pursue something like that, because the Kenai River is kind of a wide open thing, and the Kosilof River is getting to be pretty crowded too. So we probably need to take another go around and look at that.
Well, look for that study that was done by it was done in the 90s. Robin Taylor got it going. It tells the state what we need to do to get us into a limited entry program.
Okay.
That's what we need to do.
Thank you for your testimony, Don. Is there any other questions of Mr. Westland? Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Next is Larry McQuarrie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Larry McQuarrie. I operate Sportsman's Cove Lodge on Prince of Wales, on the Ketchikan side of Prince of Wales, so I face Ketchikan. We employ about 32 people in season. We contribute about $2 million or so to the Ketchikan economy each year. I've been very active in fisheries politics. I've served on three committees of the North Council since 1993, primarily always with halibut issues. I've been on the conference board at the IPHC for numerous years, and I currently serve on the Ketchikan ADF&G Advisory Committee. And I've earned all or part of my living fishing, both commercials and sport fishing, for 58 continuous years now. I have some serious issues with the bill. In general, I support the concept of it. Originally, it was my understanding that we went into this process to affect limited entry. And the bill as it sits now doesn't really do that. It doesn't have anything to do with any vessels, and it really doesn't limit guides per se. Basically, all you have to do is pay the fee and write the exam enough times until you pass it. But it really doesn't restrict. It doesn't put a finite number on the number of guides that we're going to end up with. It doesn't restrict that in any way. And I thought that was what the original intent was, because of the state constitution. It was an end run around the constitution to get us limited entry, and it really doesn't do that, and that's my biggest concern with it. The composition of the board is also a bit of concern for me. One of the other stated intents of the bill was to provide a unified sport fishing voice that could support the industry. But the nine members of the board are very diverse, and it even includes two people who are not members of the industry. And we've tried in the past to build statewide organizations. I was a founder of an organization called the Alaska Sportfish Council many years ago, where we tried to encompass all of the various sport fish entities throughout the state and the interior and what have you, and it collapsed because we could not coalesce over a unified position. And I'm afraid that we're setting this one up for failure because of the composition of the board. I'm a little concerned about the powers that the board has.
Larry, could I have you summarize pretty quickly and gone over the time?
Yeah, that's that's my main concerns. Is I am not against limited entry. I'm for limited entry. I helped write the Halibut Charter limited entry plan, and if you look in the stakeholders committee, there's an alternative number 6 in there that I also wrote for limited entry. So I'm not against limited entry. We need to do something, but I'm not sure this is the right vehicle. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, next we go to North Pole, Ken Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I also appreciate Senator McGuire's efforts on the bill and the help she's offered to the sport fisheries. I've submitted comments via email and POMS already on this, so I'll try to be brief. I do oppose this bill in its present form, even though it's come a long ways through the process that I've been involved with in making comments. I philosophically disagree with it just because it creates another government bureaucracy that has to be funded and fed, and they have a bad habit of growing. It's a duplication of requirements in most cases, if not all cases, that already exist. That, you know, the enforcement is there in some cases, in other cases it's not. And we object, or I object, to one size fits all. I should say I'm a small lodge and charter operator out of Valdez, Alaska. I've been out there since 1984. As I said, I've offered several suggestions to improve the bill, but it's still not satisfactory, so I still have to oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Appreciate your time. Any questions? No questions here. Thanks. Next will be Melvin Grove from Big Lake.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for letting me speak today in opposition to Senate Bill 24. My name is Melvin Grove. I'm president of the Prince William Sound Charter Boat Association, representing the charters out of Valdez and Whittier. Just so you know, too, I'm a board member of the Alaska Outdoor Council, president of the Alaska Outdoor Access Alliance, and vice chair of the Mat Valley Fish and Game Advisory Committee. I have been involved in this fight, I believe, since 2008 when the original guide license fee was scheduled to sunset. My complaint was, why should we, as individual operators, be paying the tax to cover the logbook program when the state accepted this responsibility from the feds under the federal program? Saltwater logbooks would have been free, and as charter clients, they could have fished for free under the National Registry. How ironic is it now that the state legislative legal staff is recommending that the state use general funds to pay for the electronic logbook program? As I stated, Fish and Game and this legislative body accepted the responsibility for the logbook program, and they should pay for it. Obviously, Ledge Legal agrees. However, we do not need Senate Bill 24 to accomplish this task. Continue the current licensing requirement. Licensing that requires guides to be insured and know basic first aid and CPR. Reduce the cost required to administer the wallet size license and provide the sticker. I believe this amounts to $10. What problem does Senate Bill 24 solve? This bill is being pushed by friends who fish with friends on the Kenai River. I sympathize with the overcrowding issue, but adding a bureaucracy system doesn't solve the problem and surely solves nothing for us. Unless this bill can provide legislative mandated benefits, we should table it. I suggest we attach House Bill 20 and require the governor to select more sport and subsistence users to the North Pacific Marine Fisheries Council, as suggested in HCR 13. Let's not play lip service, but mandate that Alaskans and citizens who choose to harvest their own food resources should have priority when it comes to resource management. Until this state is willing to step up and support the rights of individuals to harvest its own resource, we are not apt to support any bill that is merely established to discourage more participants from assisting citizens from that endeavor. And I thank you for your time. And I do thank Senator McGuire and her staff for listening to some of the changes that we have made, a lot of those suggested changes we've seen in this latest update. But it still does not go far enough. And, again, we need to just ask ourselves, what problem does this bill solve? And to say that this bill is just going to give us some kind of clout in the political arena is just, it's wishful thinking. If we think that's the reason we're trying to pass this, and let's put it in writing. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Melvin. Any questions? No questions. Next is Heath Hilliard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My board members, Mr. Ohouse and Mr. Malcolm. So I don't have a lot to add from what they've already stated. Simply wanted to reiterate what you've heard multiple times to extend a great deal of thanks and appreciation to Senator McGuire and her staff, particularly Mr. Pawlowski, and also this committee for the time and effort they put into crafting this committee substitute. As you have heard even from people that still oppose the bill, there have been a number of provisions that have been changed to at least make the bill more palatable even to some of the opponents. And what I would further add is that on behalf of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, we are committed to continuing the discussion with other people throughout the industry and facilitating that discussion with Senator McGuire's office and subsequent committees as they take up this bill. So, again, I don't really have much to add. I think a number of the provisions that were added in this committee substitute, particularly the move to fund the development of the electronic logbook through general funds, was a very positive amendment and one that we are completely supportive of. So with that, I don't have any additional specific comments, but I'm available for questions.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions at this time. Thanks for your testimony. Next is Pete Raynor in Anchorage.
Yeah, hello and good evening to everyone. My name is Pete Raynor. I manage Kulik Lodge out in Katmai National Park, southwest area of the state. As others have done, I want to thank Senator McGuire, her staff, the committee, for listening to our testimony and making many of the changes that they've made to Senate Bill 24. I've been watching the progress of this bill for a couple years now. I never did like the bill, and I still don't, despite the changes. It seems to me that it's just way too much, and I don't see where it accomplishes anything good. Try as I might, I just don't think it'll accomplish anything good for the industry, and if there's any local issues, whether it be Kenai, Southeast, or anywhere else in the state, let those areas deal with whatever issues those are. This one-size-fits-all, as stated before, doesn't fit, and that's pretty much my testimony, and I will add one other thing. Bristol Bay is a pretty highly competitive place. We have a lot of competition, and I don't fear my competition. I fear the government. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate your testimony. Next is Sonny Peterson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've testified at these hearings, the last one here in Anchorage. As you may remember, I operate Katmai Land, Inc. in Katmai Air, Kulik Lodge, Brooks Lodge, and Grosvenor Lodge in Katmai National Park. And I'm also the president of the Katmai Service Providers, which is an organization of operators, both sport fishing, bear viewing, and others that operate in Katmai National Park. It includes almost all the Southwest Alaska sport fishing operations. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in the past, and I do appreciate the fact that our testimony was listened to, because some of the changes were made were because of things that in the original bill that basically would have put us out of business. We testified against that bill because as it was written, it would have put us out of business. There was anybody who would have been hiring seasonal guides such as ours as employees, would have been impossible to fill those positions. But despite the changes, we're still against it, because while the original version was terrible, it still places an undue burden on the lodge business. And there's no compelling issue that I know of that requires this kind of legislation. In the problem statement that was part of this on your website or somebody's website about this bill, it says one of the problems is that the sport fishing industry is not recognized by the state, making it subject to harmful laws and regulations. Well, this is a harmful law and regulation. So, you know, again, we can't support it. And with all due respect to this committee, I don't see why this is a resource issue. There is no problem with the resources that this bill solves. No one is suggesting that reduced bag limits or anything like that. The Fish and Game would handle that, or the Board of Fish. We don't need this bill to continue the logbook program. The old bill could do that. And to me, this is about operating a business in the state of Alaska and limiting competition. It's not about resources. It's about commerce, and in the case of this bill, it's about limiting commerce. You know, it's clear who's supporting this business. You know, listening to it, you know, most of the testimony in favor was from two or three organizations, mostly in Kenai and Southeast Alaska. And, you know, they were all members of the same group. It's kind of like, you know, the unions always get their members out to vote while the silent majority isn't listened to. And I'm afraid that's what it kind of sounds like here.
Could I get you to wrap up, Sonny? We're over time here.
Almost everybody else other than those organizations are against it. The people in those areas want something like this. Well, then let them have it, but don't force it on the rest of the industry against our wishes. And I guess that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Jim Albert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to have the opportunity to comment again. Jim Albert, manager of Brooks Lodge. I'm in opposition of Senate Bill 24, even though there has been some substantial changes to it. I just still do not see the need to create another government agency to regulate our industry that is already heavily regulated. I believe this bill is still overly burdensome to us, and those are my comments, and I'm sure we will pass along some more through the electronic process and that. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony, Jim. Next is Bud Hodson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senators. My name is Bud Hodson. I own and operate Tick Chick Narrows Lodge out north of Dillingham in western Bristol Bay. I've been in the sport fishing business over 30 years, served 4 years on the Board of Fisheries. I chair the Guide Charter Task Force that developed the language that is law now that we use. So I'm pretty familiar with what's been going on. It's unfortunate that we got to where we are now the way we got there. Because when the task force came up with a guide board, they wanted the guide board to limit entry, to have areas, to have different tests for different areas, to limit how many areas a guide could be in, pretty much like the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Well, now we're not trying to limit entry. We're not having areas. We're not testing assistant guides. We're not testing people for different areas of the state. We're going to have one generic test. So I question whether we need a guide board, a 9-member guide board anymore. There's some things in here that need to be addressed, but to create a bureaucracy with a board like that, when you're not doing all the things that's been changed, and Senator McGuire, you did a fantastic job on changing this, I question whether that bureaucracy needs to be installed. I really think that you could get rid of the guide board and address some of the issues that the guides are addressing, and either the Board of Fish can do it, or there can be some statute changes to the existing statutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Bud. Appreciate your testimony. Last person up to testify today is Chaco Perriman.
Thank you, members. My name is Chaco Perriman. I'm down here in Kodiak. I was part of the original task force that helped to come up with it. I want to thank Senator McGuire for all the work that she's done on it and the changes that she's made. I understand, and the last time that I gave some testimony, I questioned what the fees were going to be, and hopefully if this now goes on to finance, we'll find out what those fees are going to be, but I still do have some concerns about some of the funding for the purpose of this board. I think that the outfitter test needs to be put back into this. as well as the ability for the board to limit use in specific areas and have specific tests for specific areas. Otherwise, I'm not sure what the purpose of the testing is. To be able to just retest immediately doesn't seem like that validates somebody's qualifications or makes it it wouldn't give me much comfort to know that somebody could take that test and retest until they passed it and make me feel that they had proved that they were competent. It's a little too easy. And having said that, I think that's all I have, and I do support it, but I would like to see the board have the ability to limit participation in specific areas. And without that, I'm not sure that the community and the people that are in my area could support it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it very much. Is there any questions? I see no questions. Thanks a lot. With that, that's the end of our people that are signed up to testify. Is there anybody here in Juneau that wishes to testify? Seeing none, with that, I'm going to close public comment. I'm going to hold this bill over to Wednesday, see if we can get a new fiscal note and take one more look at it. And this time, it's 20 after 5. Thank you for your patience. Next meeting is Wednesday. We'll bring up Senate Bill 13 is done. We'll bring up Senate Bill 24 and hear from DNR Commissioner Sullivan. That we're adjourned.